Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to Creating a Family. Talk about adoption and infertility. Today we're going to be talking about how to help older children prepare to be adopted. I'm Dawn Davenport. I'm the director of Creating a Family. We are the National Adoption and Infertility Education and Support Nonprofit. Our website is creatingafamily.org. We are a weekly radio show and we use the podcast model. That way you can listen whenever and wherever you want. That also means you can listen on your phone or you can listen on your iPod or you can listen on your tablet or you can listen on your computer. That's the beauty of podcasting, my friends. You can also subscribe to the podcast. The easiest way to do that is whatever app you're listening to, if you're listening on your phone, is to just click subscribe. And if you're not listening on your phone, you can download any of the free podcast playing apps, either from Google Play or iTunes, and listen. And then you can subscribe very easily just by typing in the name of Creating a Family and click subscribe. This show is brought to you by our corporate sponsor, Ferring Pharmaceutical. If you have struggled with infertility, it is so easy to feel overwhelmed. For comprehensive resources, including infertility information, treatment options, and ways to save, you can go to their website, faringfertility.com. This show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not happen without the generous support from our gold sponsors, who believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to those struggling to create a family. Some of our great gold sponsors include the Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program at Nightlight Christian Adoptions. They have been providing embryo donation services for nearly 20 years. Children's Connection, Inc., they are an adoption agency with offices throughout Texas providing domestic infant adoption, embryo donation adoption, home studies, and post-adoption support to families throughout the United States. Vista Del Mar, a licensed and accredited nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience with three adoption programs, private infant, international, and foster care. Hopscotch Adoptions, a Hague-accredited adoption agency, placing children from Armenia, Bulgaria, Georgia, Ghana, Guyana, Morocco, Pakistan, Serbia, Ukraine, and they also do kinships adoptions. And Holt International, they have been leading the global community in finding families for children who need them. They also do a great job of providing pre- and post-adoption support for those families. Today we're going to be talking about helping prepare older children for what it really means to be adopted. Adoptive parents have a long time to prepare, oftentimes well over a year, sometimes many years. But children sometimes have very little notice. And let's face it, adoption is a huge transition. Perhaps it's a welcome transition, perhaps it's not from a child's standpoint. So what can we as parents do? What can social workers do? And what can we request if we're adopting internationally for orphanage care providers to do? We're going to be talking with Rhonda Jarima. She is the Director of Support Services with Nightlight Christian Adoption, and she's a mom through adoption of five kids. We also have Whitney White. She is the International Education Counselor with Lifetime Children's Services. This show first aired a number of years ago, and we want to bring it, breathe new life into it by re-airing it again. The information was so important and so well received that we're going to give it a fresh new life. Listen in and enjoy. Welcome both Rhonda and Whitney. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. We appreciate the invitation.
Well, it seems obvious that what parents can do to prepare kids is dependent on the child's age, among other factors, of course. So I'd like to somewhat structure our talk today about preparing kids by working it around the age of the child being adopted. Now, I realize there isn't much preparation that can go on with a newborn, but are there some general hints that adopted parents can do, let's say, immediately after birth? Rhonda?
Yes. One of the things that I recommend families do is that they, first of all, carry a blanket, a small baby blanket, or a toy, a soft toy that you can give to a newborn and carry it around with them so it gets their smell. And we each have our own unique smell, and certainly that helps when that item is given to the baby, that it helps that baby transition and understand that that's a comfort item and that smells the same as this person that's holding me.
You know, so much depends on the hospital policy. We hear some hospitals it depends on a lot of things. One, it depends on the birth parent's preferences at that point as to how much contact the adoptive parents will have. But it somewhat depends on hospital policy. So, and I'm going to direct this question to you again, Rhonda, because I know that, Whitney, you're primarily involved with International.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So, Rhonda, are there things that adoptive parents and working in conjunction with the social worker and the expectant woman, or the expectant parents, I should say, in advance, to try to encourage hospitals to allow more time and presence immediately after the birth? Have you seen that be effective?
Absolutely. And I think what we do is we really try as social workers to have strong relationships with the social workers in the hospital so that they're comfortable with us coming in. And then also as we build the relationship with the birth mother, we have our social worker that works with the birth mother as well as the social worker that works with the family. And so those social workers, too, have built a strong relationship with both the birth mother and the adoptive family and hopefully with one another so that they can all work together and that the hospital certainly feels comfortable allowing as much contact as the birth mother is comfortable with.
Right, and I suppose then one of the best things that adoptive parents can do is be respectful and kind to the expectant or the parents, the birth parents, immediately after birth. This is it may not seem like you're doing much to bond with the baby, but in fact by supporting your child's first mom, you are, because you're making their life easier, and sometimes being respectful means backing off, and I don't want to leave the impression that your child will be badly damaged if that's what is necessary to make this time and to give your the expectant woman or the new mom a chance to make a fully formed decision. So what about, let's move on though, to kids, babies, but not newborns. So and when we're speaking domestically, oftentimes when we're talking of domestic adoption of children past newborns, we're often talking about adopting through foster care. And I should mention that there is almost always a policy in place or a protocol in place set up by the child's caseworker for both transitioning and preparing the child for adoption, and it generally works around the general idea of gradual exposure and slowly transitioning more and more time with the adoptive parents whenever possible. So it's usually adoptive parents don't have a huge amount of say in that. It's a fairly well-established protocol. Have either of you seen anything different from that now when we're talking about adopting from foster care? Because I think the remaining of the show will probably talk more about where parents do have more say. Let's see. Again, I'll direct this to Rhonda since you do more on the domestic side than does Whitney.
Actually, I do primarily international.
Okay. So anyway, I will speak for it because it, almost always the child's caseworker will be dictating the transition and will be instituting the advanced preparation. So for when you're adopting domestically an older child or even a toddler or a older infant, the protocol will be set. You can the things you can do is make it be make it easy for the caseworker, letting the caseworker know that you are as willing and able to do a gradual transition if that is possible. And the other thing is being open to as many conversations as possible with the child's foster parents ahead of time. So all those are the things that you can do to make things easier. So now let's talk about when we are adopting a baby where there isn't, not a newborn, but internationally we're adopting a child who is an infant still but not a newborn. And again, this child is certainly pre-verbal. What can parents do to make this transition smoother or in some way try to prepare that child, Whitney?
From an international standpoint, it just makes things so complicated because before that child is in that family's home, there are just limited things that they actually have control over. But I just urge families and encourage families to do all that they can, even before they travel to meet their child for the first time. And then while they're in country, there are many practical things that can be done to help that child transition easier into the United States. Like Rhonda said, I love covering some of the sensory type elements. So if a family is able to send a care package to a child, sending a stuffed animal or sending a blanket that has been washed and has spent some time in that family's home can go a really long way because that child becomes more familiar with the smell of mom and dad. And I even tell mom sometimes, sounds a little strange, but I tell them, go ahead and sleep with that stuffed animal. Sleep with that blanket so that it takes on the scent of mom. So I completely agree with Rhonda, and I feel like that translates also into international adoption of something just practical and easy that can be done. And like I said, care packages. There are a lot of things that can be sent in a care package to a child that can help with just familiarity and affection. And so before that family travels to meet their child, the goal in preparing that child from afar, I would say, would just be familiarity and affection. So sending pictures, sending things to make the family look more familiar to the child and to just show we care about you and to show that affection.
Well, you know, I can see the idea of pictures and care packages for older children or toddlers and older kids.
Yeah.
But if you've got a six-month-old, and granted, there are not a lot, I don't want to leave a false impression here, there are not a lot of countries where you're going to be adopting a six-month-old, but it is still possible to get a nine to 12-month-olds are still possible. What would you put, Whitney, in a care package for a nine-month-old that would in some, because the care package is going to be sent over in advance. So this is something that, you know, that the child would, you know. So other, you said a blanket and or a stuffed animal that picked up the smell, both of the house as well as the mom or whoever the primary caregiver is going to be, the mom or the dad. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else might you put in that?
I think that for a younger child, focusing on those sensory type elements are going to be the most important thing. So I said blanket, I said a stuffed animal, and something that some of our social workers here at Lifeline encourage their families to do is, you know, the fun Build-A-Bear activity where you go and you make a bear and you make it specifically for the child. Well, they have these Build-A-Bears that you can build now with a voice chip that comes in them. And so something that can be done on the family's behalf is not just sending this bear that smells like home, but sending something with a recorded message from mom or dad or from those caretakers that so that that child can listen to it over and over again and become even more familiar with that parent's or that caregiver's voice. So, yeah, I would say focus more so on the sensory type elements for the younger child. So the blankets and the bear with the voice chip and that sort of thing.
Well, and if you
and
were
still,
a
I think that even pictures can be helpful. I know that I would also we recommend that families laminate pictures, especially for a small child. If those pictures are laminated, then they can maybe hold them and play with them. And but yeah, it is. It makes it a little more difficult in what is actually practical for a child when they're so young.
You know, it occurs to me as I'm listening to you that, especially with a baby or a young toddler, that in addition to preparing the toddler or the baby, you're also educating the child's caregiver as to where this child is going to be going. And perhaps part of your goal is to influence their idea that this of who this child is going to, because that attitude that this is a positive thing for the child might somehow permeate down through to the child just through the ways caregivers have of expressing. So pictures, if for no other reason.
Right, and I would encourage the family sending a note to the caregivers and go ahead and have that translated into their language here in the States before that's sent, but a note to the caretakers just explaining that very thing of here are these pictures of ourselves. If you will go ahead and start calling us mom and dad and make some suggestions along those lines can be helpful for a child of any age.
That's a good idea. Rhonda, do you recommend that if you're going to change the child's name, that you start asking the caregiver to start incorporating, perhaps not exclusively, but incorporating that new name into the when they refer to the child?
That brings up an interesting issue. I generally recommend that families think very carefully about whether they want to change the child's name or not. So often with a child coming here from another country, their name is all they have. I've seen children as young as two be very insistent on maintaining their name even when the caregivers have started trying to call them by the other name. Their identity has been very strongly associated with that particular name, although I have seen other children from other countries where it's more typical to change a name, come over and go through the name change transition very easily. So I think in part it depends on the country and what kind of acceptance there is there towards changing the name. Certainly if the caretakers can begin transitioning and calling the child by both names, that is helpful. And then when the parent picks up the child, that the parent too is using both names and then gradually switches over to their name of choice.
I'm glad you raised the issue about name change. Do you think, does your opinion differ depending on the age of the child?
Actually, not necessarily. Truly, from my experience, it seems to be determined more by the child's personality. I've seen some children transition very easily to a new name. I remember meeting one family coming off the plane, and the little boy was 6 years old, and I went up to him and I greeted him in Russian by his Russian name, and he looked at me and he pounded his chest and he goes, "Yeah, Taylor, I'm Taylor." And he was very proud to be Taylor now, and I thought that was marvelous.
Whitney, what do you recommend? And in particular, I'm thinking about the concept, because naming is a form of claiming from the adoptive parent standpoint, and a typical practice, or I shouldn't say typical, a common practice is to have two names, the child's given name in their from their country, or what they were called first, what they were named by either the orphanage workers or their first parents. And then have that as their middle name or vice versa, so that the child has two names and can choose because sometimes kids don't want, as they get older, a name that sets them apart. But as Rhonda points out, sometimes that's exactly who they are, and they do want to be set apart that way. What is your thoughts on that, Whitney?
Yeah, I think that Rhonda made some great points there and just good things to think about. I kind of fall in the mid-range and kind of have mixed emotions about that as well. I think that keeping some of that child's identity absolutely is most important. And yet I think sometimes children have a tendency that when they come here and they're adapting to being a typical child in the United States, they don't want to be that different, and they don't want to be set apart and have a name that no one has ever heard of before. So absolutely, I agree with Rhonda that it depends on the child. And if they might have the type of personality where they just want to blend in, they already know that they're different and they don't want to be more different than they already are. But at the same time, I think that some children, it could convey to them that something is wrong with them or something was wrong with their given name at birth to have that changed. And so I'm kind of on the fence a little bit. I think that I have a little bit mixed emotions about that, and I think that there's strong points for either side.
I do think, although we're breaking this out a little bit by age, but since we're talking about name, I do think with older children, and again, the exact age really is somewhat dependent on the maturity, the language abilities, or whatever, and the personality of the child. But I do think if a child is old enough to communicate, that they should be brought into the process and have the let them help with that decision.
Absolutely.
So that
yeah, I definitely
choose.
Agree.
Yeah. Rhonda, do you see, we've done a number of shows on toddler adoption and the issues specific to adopting a child in that age of 1 to 3, 1 to 2.5, somewhere there. And there are some unique things about that age. From a preparation and a transition standpoint, do you see many differences in the way you would prepare or transition a toddler versus the way you might prepare either a older child or a baby?
Yes, I think oftentimes with a toddler, families anticipate the child because they've only been in care for a fairly short time, a year, 2 years, 3 years, that they will transition very quickly over to their new home. And I think it's still important to do all the steps of preparation. And I think particularly for that age group, I really recommend that families treat the child more as a newborn and that they try to they don't bother with toilet training. They put the child in diapers. They bottle feed the child if at all possible, that they feed the child as much as possible. And this is sometimes difficult with a toddler that is very much saying, no, I want to do this myself. But I still think it's very important for that child to get used to the care that's provided by their primary caretaker, to be held and looked at face-to-face. I had one dad who I had really talked to him about his 13-month-old and feeding the child and bottle feeding this child. And he was great about bottle feeding him, but he'd do it with the child facing the TV. And I corrected him very quickly and said, no, the idea is that you're having face-to-face contact and he's learning to watch your eyes and see the love in your eyes towards him. And that's what you want that connection to be, because that helps you build your attachment. And that's what's so critical those first 3 years is that building of attachment. And so I think as much as the family with the primary caretaker, the mom or the dad or grandparent, really focusing in on those attachment type behaviors such as peekaboo games and feeding the child, those are things that are very, very important in terms of building that foundation of attachment.
You know, let me interject here. We had a great discussion. It's been a couple of months now. couple of months ago now on the Creating a Family Facebook support group, practical tips for families. A mom posted her experience with, and I don't remember exactly, I believe her son was probably 18 months or so and had not been bottle fed for many months. He had not been bottle fed from it probably, well, I guess 10 months on. So he had been a long way from the bottle. And it was her experience reintroducing the bottle, and then other people chimed in on their experiences, giving a lot of really practical tips and advice. I just found it fascinating and great. You can find that just by going through the history, and there may even be a way to search a Facebook group that I'm not sure of. But anyway, I strongly recommend it. As I read, I really learned a lot. I learned a lot myself. Whitney, you had talked about care packages. Let's talk about a care package for a toddler. What might you include, both things in addition to in what you might have included as an infant, but anything else for a child who's really pre-verbal perhaps, or very beginning stages of being verbal? Anything that you might include there?
Yeah, that for an older child, I would definitely include more pictures. Pictures of the family that they're coming to, pictures of faces of the family and of their new loved ones, pictures of what they're coming to, including their home and their room and pets. Or siblings.
Let's don't forget pets. Pets are really important.
Don't forget the pets, because that can be slightly overwhelming for the child for sure. And then also letters to the child. We talked about sending a note to the caretaker and asking them to do certain things. But having a letter to the child can also be great.
This would probably be a pre-verbal child, so although you can send a letter, the letter would probably
really
be more important. Yeah, it'd probably be more for the caregiver who's reading the letter to the child. I would assume it at this very young age. We're going to move to talking about older kids in just a sec. Some of the preparation for, and again, we're kind of talking about that toddler pre-verbal, mm-hmm. 2 to 3 year old, 1 to 3 year old range. Some of the preparation can go on from the U.S. when you're in the U.S. and you're trying to work to prepare the child before you arrive. And the suggestions you've made would be things like a care package and a blanket and stuffed mm-hmm. animal, perhaps one, recordings of your voice, lots of pictures and things such as that would be helpful. Rhonda, is there anything else before we move into talking about what you can do in country once you arrive, is there anything else that you would suggest for that pre-verbal or early verbal child to help prepare them while you're still here in the U.S.?
Well, I think there are some picture books about adoption that might be helpful. With a toddler, that might be something that you want to hold off on for more of the 3 to 5 year old range. But I absolutely agree with Whitney in terms of something soft that they can hold, a letter that the caregiver, and it really is more for the caregiver, because as the caregiver feels more comfortable with the family,
mm-hmm.
then the caregiver is going to be more supportive of the adoption.
Exactly. Even if it's a subtle difference, it's an important difference. Right.
Yes. Yeah. And also I think with the photographs, I really like, they've got some soft photo books that are wonderful, where the child has their own book, and I think labeling those photographs with names of family members in the child's language as well as in English are really helpful.
Where would people get the soft photo book?
I've seen them at Hallmark or other stores, that Toys R Us, I guess Babies R Us, where they have soft, they're toddler books but they're very soft. They're made out of cloth, and you slip a photograph in, and they're just
Okay. All right. So we've
One other point before we move on that I was thinking is, you know, it's so hard with international adoption, and when you're mailing something to an orphanage, we really don't know whether that's going to successfully get there or if it's not or if it's going to be picked over. So I always just tell families that these things might not be possible. All of these recommendations might not be possible, but it sure doesn't hurt to try or to just send it anyway. But something that the family does have control over during that time and kind of an indirect way of helping that child's adjustment in the future would be for the parents to learn some simple phrases in that child's native language so that when they do have that personal contact and that interaction, they can communicate affection towards that child, or they can ask about basic needs of the child so that they can help meet the needs of them. So that's something that the parents do have more control over that I would urge them to do, is to just learn some simple phrases in that child's language that can help with connection when they do meet.
Absolutely. That's a great idea, and I particularly liked your suggestion that, you know, and I do think we, as I think all of us in the adoption professional community, may have a little bit of a fault here. We talk about ideas, but it's important to realize that if it doesn't happen, you know, if, let's say, you send a care package with a blanket that you have carefully slept with for a week and carried around your house and just it's permeated and picked up all the smells, it was just daggummit the best smelling blanket you could possibly have. So you send it over there and the child never gets it. Or when you show up, you find out that they have kept it pristine, wrapped in the same plastic it went over there in, the plastic you put on to make sure that the smells didn't evaporate, and it's, the child's never seen it. The world is not going to fall apart. You know, that it does not mean that your child is going to be on a therapist's couch, you know, for the rest of their life because this did, you know, this plan that you had did not work. So I particularly appreciate that you can do all these things and, you know, the best laid plans and all that type of stuff. But if it doesn't work out, well, then you go to plan B. It's a part of life, and it's certainly a part of adoption for sure. All right, so now you've arrived in country, and assuming that this is not an escort country where the child is brought to you, you arrive in country. In some countries, you actually, this is one of your, you have one of a couple of visits. This is the first visit or the second visit. In other countries, you will receive custody very shortly after arrival and will be adopting on this one trip. What are some specific things that you could do as a parent that can help prepare your child and transition your child while still in the country of your child's birth? Whitney, we'll start with you.
I'm sorry, the phone is going in and out, and I didn't fully hear your question. So
in country.
Yeah,
once
will you repeat that for me?
Okay. No problem at all. Once you arrive in the country, what are some things that you can do to help prepare your child for the big change coming, which is all of a sudden you're going to be leaving everything you've ever known and everything that you've held dear is going to be taken from you. What are some things that you can do to prepare your child? And another way to ask that would be to help transition your child, because it's, I think at this point, pretty much one and the same.
Right. I think that the biggest emphasis I would put on is just making as minimal change as possible and just remembering what this huge transition is like for that child, and put yourself in that child's shoes and think about how really the parents at that point are just strangers to them. And so they need to move slowly and make baby steps as they transition. And it's okay if that child holds on to what is familiar. I, again, would bring, because we don't know if they got the first one to begin with, and it might have taken on the new orphanage scent by the time you arrive, bring another transition object, bring blanket or stuffed animal, bring more videos and photos. So everyone has these nice laptops or iPads where you can have a video tour of the house pre-made before you ever travel. And you can show that to the child, one, to just make them be more familiar with what their new home is going to look like, and it can be used as an amazing tool for English. You know, if you're going through these videos and you're going through all these pictures and you're labeling, like Rhonda said earlier, then that can be a great tool for English. So I would definitely suggest bringing more photographs, bringing more videos. Take a list of questions to ask the caregivers. So if the family's given the opportunity to speak to the caregiver, then ask, does this child sleep with anything? What's their normal routine? What are they afraid of? Is probably one of the first questions that I would ask. And if given the time, then prioritize your list and towards the end of the list and ask, what temperature do they like their bottle? What do they like to eat? You know, all of those different things. And then there are a lot of discussion topics that can take place with the child. So a lot of things that I would encourage the families to talk probably will happen through a translator initially, but a lot of different discussion topics that I would broach with the child.
I should add that we have a list of questions on our site to ask your child's caregiver, and I absolutely reinforce what
That's
you
wonderful.
Said, prioritize. Go through the list, and we have prioritized. However, you might have some different things, because the chances are very good you will not get through the entire list. It's a pretty extensive list, but it's mainly to give you ideas and to allow you to figure out what's important to you. Rhonda, any other specific things that you might suggest with, again, the 1 to 3 age child, when you meet the child in country and have a period of time with the child prior to the child, if this country is such that you do have any time with the child prior to removing them from their environment?
Oh, absolutely. I think Whitney gave a marvelous list. I think I had a few more ideas about things that we recommend for families, particularly with toddlers in the 1 to 3-year-old range. We recommend that they bring toys that are interactive, so that my favorite for a toddler in the 1 to 3-year-old range is one of the cars that you press a button and it moves. That really stimulates a small child and usually causes a lot of laughter, and it helps the child to feel more comfortable, because most of the time a child in that age, when they first see their prospective parent, they are pretty anxious. This is this total stranger that smells different and looks different than anything they've seen. So I really recommend that they bring some sort of toy that is fun to play with, maybe even a balloon, because that's easy to carry. They can throw that in their pocket. Also that they wear something that is bright and colorful. And oftentimes, I know when my husband and I adopted, he has this great Winnie the Pooh tie that he wears, and I have a Mickey and Minnie Mouse scarf, and that always stimulates a lot of conversation with the children, because these are characters that they recognize, mm-hmm. and really world around the world, Mickey Mouse and Winnie the Pooh seem to be real common characters. So having something even that we're wearing that drew the children in. With toddlers in the 1 to 3-year-old range, even though they are pretty much pre-language, you really want to still be able to speak, as Whitney pointed out earlier, some phrases that they understand. It's important that they, because under age 6, the children don't understand that you don't speak their language. And I know with our daughter, who was 5 when we adopted her, we spoke her language, but we spoke it slowly. And so she just thought we were really stupid. So I think it is important that families can learn the language as much as possible in preparation to adopt their child, even if the child is a toddler. Also, food is important. The transition between the food that they get in the orphanage. So as they're bringing snacks in, they might want to bring Cheerios. That's the toddlers love Cheerios, and so starting to expose them to some foods that they will have even back at home while you're visiting them in the orphanage. So I think the 3 points there are: have some sort of object that you can play with and that starts to build that relationship so that the child feels safe with you. But again, as Whitney pointed out, go very slowly in your approach with the child and understand if they cry when they first meet you, that's really a normal behavior.
So, yeah, it's actually a healthy behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another suggestion, and it's an interesting one, is to learn how to pronounce the child's name. Now, that you might think that you are saying the child's name, but in fact, given the dialect and given the way that other languages sound, the child may not recognize his name the way you're saying it. So it really is helpful to try to learn how to say your child's name in the language that your child's language, which means that's another question to ask the caregiver, and encourage them to correct you so that you can actually learn how to say the name.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little about food before we move off of the very young child age. Any suggestions on food while in country and things that you need to learn as a parent? Whitney, let's start with you.
I think that Rhonda touched on this a little bit, but I would just encourage families to not change that child's food immediately. So if the child is young enough where they are still on formula, then many parents would want to go into that situation and they would want to see that they would probably assume that whatever formula that child is receiving in an orphanage is probably not as up to par or up to the best standards that we have here in the U.S. And so there are some mamas in particular that want their children to get caught up as quickly as possible, and they want them to get the best nutritious food and formula as possible, when in reality, the most important thing is that child continues to eat. And so it might not be the best, most nutritious food, and it might not be the best, most nutritious formula, but for a little while, I would encourage families to also take that really slow, to not immediately change the formula. If it's possible to get whatever the orphanage is providing to the child, then kind of stick with that a little while as they adjust, at least those first few days or weeks. And then similarly with an older child, stick with the food that's most regular to them, and then slowly introduce, while they have that time in country, introduce and, as you said, expose them to food that they'll have in the United States, like the Cheerios. That's a great, very common snack that might be good for them to become more familiar with. So no huge advice that I have on food other than take that transition slow and stick with what's familiar, and then slowly introduce them into what is more common and what they'll be eating more regularly when that child comes home.
And one other suggestion, although depending on the country, bottle feeding is likely not going to be continuing into their toddler years. But if you adopt a child that is still being bottle fed, to try to find out what nipples they are using in the bottle and what temperature the formula has been given to the child, because that varies dramatically by country as to, and in particular the nipples. Often the nipples that are used have a very wide hole in them to speed up feeding. And so it might make sense to buy as many of the nipples there as you can before you leave. Now moving
Absolutely.
On to children who are a bit older, anytime, and we can, some of our questions will just kind of vary by the, you know, could let's say, let's start with anywhere from 3 to 6, 3 to 7 year old range. Now we've got a child who is verbal and who is very aware, at least, of the change that is happening. And one of the questions I have for both of you is, have you seen any difference in the way, have we made any progress, I guess is the real question I'm asking, in helping orphanage workers realize that children need to be prepared? There is certainly a lot of misinformation that is being given to children who are old enough to understand what is, you know, the words about what is happening. Rhonda, do you see any improvement in that area on the preparation that people in country are giving to kids who are going to be adopted, older kiddos, kids, you know, anywhere from 3, 4, and 5 on up?
Yes and no. I know when we initially adopted 18 years ago, there was very minimal information given to the children at all, certainly, of any age. Now it seems that as so many families have gone through the process and have shared some of what they've learned with the caretakers, where caretakers have shown interest, where staff of agencies has been able to go in and provide education to the caretakers, that's been tremendously helpful. And I do find that in many cases with orphanages that have placed a larger number of children, you tend to see more education, more understanding given to the children, and more preparation for the adoption, where they're talking about it and talking about some of the changes that will take place as they have pictures from other families who have adopted that they have been able to share with the children. That, too, has helped because the children can see, okay, my friend went to America, and these are the pictures of my friend at their playground, and, gee, it looks sort of like our playground. And so that's probably going to be okay because my friend did okay. So as they're able to see some of these things, that certainly has helped. But there still are feelings in many countries that adoption is not the way to go. And so it does make things difficult if you have a caregiver that is not supportive of adoption and shares, or even whether it's non-verbally, their feelings and their own fears about adoption.
Mm-hmm. Whitney, are you seeing any significant changes? And is there anything parents can do from afar to affect the preparation and what they're hearing from their caretakers?
Right. I think that it varies by country. There are some countries that seem to be doing things really well.
For example,
Colombia, right now, the children, before they are adopted, they meet with a psychologist and they typically meet with a social worker. And the social worker is able to talk to them about adoption and what is going on and explain things to them, to that child. And then even down to the detail of the social worker taking the child the week before they're going to be adopted to the courthouse to just familiarize them with what the courthouse looks like, and so that they're not shocked when that day comes. And so there are some places that seem to be doing well, but there is large, significant room for improvement in that area. Our agency is really working specifically with China, where most of our internationally adopted children through Lifeline come home. And so we are working with China to help educate staff and to help educate caretakers in the orphanages to speak, to discuss adoption in a positive way. As far as what families can do, I think that exposure is very helpful. If they have the opportunity to talk to caretakers while they're in the orphanage, while they're visiting their child, I think that the more exposure that they have to families to understand the heart behind adoption, understand the motivation that these families have, the more openly they can convey that, the more likely over time that particular caretaker is going to be more open to adoption in general and have more positive memories and positive correlations to lean on. And so I just encourage them to not overlook caretakers while they're there. If given the opportunity to have those one-on-one conversations to explain, this is my heart behind what I am doing, then maybe over time that could help as well. And then for agencies or for anyone that has a platform in those particular areas, if God has given them a platform, then by all means advocate for those children. And one of the greatest things that we could do would be to educate staff well in discussing adoption.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, the format we've used with the other ages of children on this show, we've been talking about what can parents do to help prepare the child before the parents travel, and then what can they do in country. Now we're talking about children who are, you know, 4, 5, 6 plus. We've got verbal kids. How does that change how you help prepare the child? What are the things that you can do with this age child to help prepare them that might be in addition to some of the things that you might do that you were able to do with a younger child? Rhonda?
I think with the verbal child, you really want to make sure that you are approaching them at first their developmental level, that you are providing toys that allow you to interact with that child at their level. I think certainly it's even more critical to learn phrases and understand, be able to communicate at least the basics with the child that you're adopting. For the child's preparation, again, letting the child know through photographs, and even an older child appreciates a stuffed animal that speaks with your voice and has your smell. And again, they may not receive it, but whatever you can provide is helpful. Some items, maybe a T-shirt that represents your area, or something, a hat with a college insignia on it, things that are from your area that you can send to the child while they're there, things that they would enjoy very, and maybe something that they could share with their friends. Once you're there, I think it's important to come to the child from their level and to engage in activities. Maybe if you're allowed to take them out and throw a ball around, or go to the park and play, and really get to know your child. And as much as you can interact with the child, and ask your child to teach you some of the words from their language, because I think, again, that gives the child more control, and the child feels very much out of control. And so whatever you can do as a parent to help that child feel more in control. So, again, you want to provide photographs, lots of photographs of their room, of their family, of potential friends, children in the neighborhood, the park in the neighborhood, the school that they might be going to, so that they have a better understanding of what the future holds. Because to them, it's really, I'm going to Mars, and this is really scary.
Whitney, have you seen any countries or any orphanages or care facilities within countries that have been able to incorporate something like Skype between the parents and the child prior to adoption?
Yeah, that seems to be kind of a touchy area with Hague regulations, and then with orphanage and country regulations. It's not permissible in many areas, but in some it is, and if that's a possibility, then I absolutely would recommend Skyping with a child from afar. So yes, that's something that we see a little bit, and I wish that it was available across the board in multiple countries.
Do you recommend when that happens that you have a translator or that is...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If there's a translator, if there's someone who can help that child and parent interact, then definitely that would be most helpful. And just in discussing in-country, while the family is in-country, I think that one of the biggest emphasis needs to be placed on attachment and bonding, because the truth is that the child feeling comfortable with the parent is what's going to ease that transition the most. Them taking off in this rocket ship, flying through the air, they're going to be more comfortable and handle that transition better if they feel more safe with their new parents, and they're going to handle those transitions easier. So I think just reminding parents that bonding doesn't just happen, that we need to provide experiences and interactions that will promote bonding, is one of the most important things.
And
then
can you
just
give us
over-communicating.
Whitney, can you give us an example of some specific activities in country that can promote bonding?
Yeah, I love the idea of playing with stickers and putting stickers on each other's faces, or mirroring each other, say, okay, you be my mirror, and you move very slowly and the child moves with you. I love all of those type examples because it encourages eye contact. Anything that encourages eye contact and encourages that connection is very helpful. So just two that come to mind right off is mirroring each other and then playing with stickers and anything that can encourage that eye contact.
Okay, Rhonda, I'll give you the last say. Anything specific that you would recommend in country to help prepare children, older kids, for the abrupt change that is getting ready to happen in their lives?
As Whitney noted, I think it really helps to have games that allow the child to interact well with the parent. And I think for an older child, you want to have the child share their favorite activities, their favorite place, so that the parent, when they're taking them from this very special place, also has that understanding. And so that the parent is taking lots of photographs of the places that are important to that child and making sure that when they return home, that those photographs become part of the family environment, whether in the child's room or up on the mantelpiece in the living room, that the child's past becomes the family's, part of the family's environment.
That's a great idea. And on that wonderful piece of advice, we will draw this to a close. Thank you so much, Rhonda Jarima and Whitney White, for being our guests today on Creating a Family. To get more information, which I'm sure our audience will want, about both of our guests as well as the agencies they work with, you can go to the Nightlight Adoption Agency website, which is nightlight.org, or you can just click on their logo on the right-hand side of any page of our site. You can also go to Lifeline's website, which is lifelinechild.org, all one word. Next week's show will be an interview with the author of a great new parenting book with an equally great title, Eat, Sleep, Poop. I just love the title there. I'm also enjoying the book, I should add. So save up all your new parent questions and send them in to us to ask on this show. To stay in touch with the latest developments in adoption and infertility, as well as receive the upcoming week's blog and show topic, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter on any left-hand side of any page at creatingafamily.org. The UN estimates that there are 143 million orphans in the world, including 107,000 currently available for adoption in the U.S. foster care system. These kids, as well as the millions of older kids throughout the world, deserve a home. To get more information about the U.S. Kids Waiting for a Family, you can go to the adoption resource page of creatingafamily.org, where we include links to various photo listings of some of these kids under the page Waiting Kids. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I will see you next week.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.